support comes from Foodworks Natural Market, your local full-service organic and natural food store, offering health and wellness programs and a variety of vegan and vegetarian selections. Located in Guilford, Old Saybrook, and Cheshire, information at food-works.org. Faith here with a welcome toast. It was Graham Greene who said, "Champagne, if you are seeking the truth, is better than a lie detector." Please feel free to consume this show podcast in small bites or eat the whole thing.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot? And noise of old lang syne.
This is the funniest thing.
I didn't hear Chris. Everybody.
No, you don't want to hear me sing.
I had to hum because I don't know the words.
Yeah, and I don't know the words either.
I heard him. I heard Chris.
We are celebrating. This is our last show of the year, and we're doing this. This cracks me up. I once did a piece for All Things Considered National Peace. I went out on the street with a microphone, and I said to people, "Do you know any Christmas carols?" And everyone said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, what's your favorite?" And this is as far as they could get. "Dashing through the snow."
One verse. No, not even the whole verse.
The whole thing.
That was excellent.
I think that was us just now. All right, here's what we're doing. We are celebrating New Year's. This is the last show of the year. What would you say? Let me tell you who I'm with. I'm with, of course, our senior contributors. We have the producer, senior producer, Robin Doyon Aiken. We love you for your work all year, Robin. Thank you.
Yes. Big hugs. Yes. Big hugs.
I love you guys. We've got Alex Provence, senior contributor. We have Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. We have our cocktail guy, Anthony DeSeria, wine broker, Mark Raymond, all here. What was it the year of? 2016, I think 15 was the year of kale, and you could argue that 16 was a continuation of kale.
Make it stop.
I think people discovered kohlrabi this year, because now I'm seeing kohlrabi recipes everywhere, and I never even tasted it before this year.
The alien thing.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I saw of a lot of this year, too, which I didn't see last year, was Brussels sprouts were actually, they were out on the stem in grocery stores where you can just pluck them yourself off.
And I'm seeing Brussels sprouts as appetizers.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Not side dishes, but you go into restaurants and there's like, you can order a bowl of sliced, whether it be a cold salad or a little braised.
Like bacon.
Yeah, braised with everything with bacon. Could it be the year of bacon? It could always be the year.
It's always the year of bacon.
You know what disappeared in this past year? Sous vide. Cooking,
that one,
you know, poaching in bags in water at very low temperatures.
Yeah. I don't like the plastic. Challenging.
Everyone thought it was new. I have a friend who's a food scientist for Nestle's, and he laughs at us chefs who think it's new because he's like, "We've been doing that in the food laboratory forever."
And how about, I mean, isn't that essentially what people do when they buy frozen food products and drop them into a pan of boiling water?
Yeah, exactly.
In a way, it's kind of sous vide-ish.
The way I look at trends is like, does the good outweigh the bad? Does the things that it really does well, does that outweigh what it is? And the sous vide one never did it for me, as far as the good outweighing the bad.
It does work for alcohol infusions, though, where you take your fruit and your spirit and you sous vide it that way, too.
Like I said, there's some certain...
It has its good and bad points.
Because the alcohol can't evaporate away.
Exactly.
So it's trapped.
You know, the angel share is trapped inside.
I love it.
Anthony, I waited to see if we would get more of those vaporizing bars where you hold up...
You breathe the vodka
in. The alcohol.
You breathe in the vapor of the drink. You're not even tasting it, so there's no... I don't even understand.
What's the point? Why would you do that?
There was one at an airport I went through once really fast, and I was like running to get a flight, and I looked, and there's all these people with and you're like, what is that? And then you're like, oh my gosh, it's a vapor bar.
How would it happen to taste?
I mean, I think that's just, you're doing something for the effect.
Yeah.
So, I mean, definitely in an airport, you need one. It's like, I'm getting on a plane. I can't wait for this vodka. So I need this now.
So you actually absorb it?
Yes.
Yeah.
You breathe it in.
You know, one I saw that I'm happy about? I've been doing it for a little while, is octopus.
Oh, I love octopus.
Right? And it's funny because people weren't into it. And then we served so much calamari in this country, which is just small octopus in my mind.
Right.
But now you see octopus as an appetizer on a lot of menus, and I love it.
Yeah. And there's so many different ways you can do it, too.
So many. In Europe, they eat a ton of it. In Spain, in Brazil, in South America. And here I think now we're just starting to break into that.
It takes a little skill to make it right because it can be like bubblegum otherwise. But that on a wooden board with paprika and olive oil, pulpo style in Spain.
Oh, I order it every time I see it on a menu, and knock on wood, quick. Haven't had a bad one yet. And these are local Connecticut restaurants. Like I had one, Maximia, which is a restaurant that does some stone pies kind of things near me. They did a great one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
So again, seeing it. Yep. So maybe that's up there.
Where are octopi coming from?
They import some from, I've seen it from Portugal, Spain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not local.
Mediterranean. No. Not yet, maybe. Not a big enough market. No.
Farm to table.
Alex is thinking, it's like, I got a boat.
I can get those.
I get one every once in a while.
I've never seen one actually swim around the boat.
All right, let's talk about when we first started the Food Schmooze. There was a cookbook author from San Francisco who came on the show, and she said, I'm going to tell you what's coming, what the new trend is going to be for a very long time. And I said, okay. And she said, she had a cooking school there. Food as medicine.
Ah,
yeah.
That has been true for the entire, to this moment, through the entire run of the Food Schmooze.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
We have hundreds of books here in our studio that's around that theme. Hundreds.
Yeah. That what food can do to heal you, what food can do to harm you, food as medicine, the connection to it as a pharmaceutical.
And not just physical, mental too, right?
Sure.
Because food as an antidote to depression.
Yeah. She was right. Yeah. She was absolutely
anxiety, true. Yeah.
So we'll see if that continues. And I don't know what 2017 will be.
It's going to be a good year.
You know,
what do you think the new one's coming?
What are the trends coming up?
I don't know.
Let me think about that real quick.
I don't know. How about in cocktails, Anthony?
Cocktails, I think you're going to see more of what you saw this year, which was the return of the classic. More of the big ice cubes and ice programs and, you know, not watering down the cocktails and working with dilution ratios. I think you're going to see more science behind the cocktails.
So low alcohol by volume.
Low alcohol by volume.
Less sweet.
And also, less sweet, more bitter. I think you're going to see the resurgence of the Manhattans and the old fashions and the cosmopolitans and the espresso martinis are all going to be back. The whiskey sours with the egg whites. I think you're going to see where we had this peak of bartenders for the past 2 years. I made my own bitters. I made my own tinctures. This is my new, triple type of syrup. I think you're going to see getting back to simple again.
So it really will be the 1950s.
I think so. I really think so. But I think it's going to be a little blast from the past.
Can I start
more
smoking?
Natural flavors.
Oh, no.
Get my hoop skirt
But craft will definitely maintain. You're still going to see all fresh ingredients.
And I think food is going to go that way, too, now that I think of it. I think food is heading already in that direction where we're, you know, these precious plates and overdone dishes is going to the side, and people are really ordering more hearty, comforting.
Love that.
You've seen it come and go over the past 10 years, but I think this upcoming year, you're going to see a lot more of that. Simple, very good, hearty, flavorful dishes, a lot of braises, and not doing too much to the food, not overdoing it like we were in the past.
Faith, weren't you saying the cocktail party was going to come back?
I say I wish for it to come back.
Well, let's
wish. Since it's the 1950s, I think they are going to be back.
Yeah. White vinyl sofas, low glass,
I got my
coffee
fondue
tables.
Pot ready.
Frank
Come on
Sinatra.
Over.
The fondue pot.
Off-white carpets.
Shag carpet.
So we started to see wine coming out in unusual colors last year.
Orange
wine.
That's gone. There was a blue one
That was called Gick or something like that.
Are we going to see anything wild in wine? Some new grapes?
New areas.
I think we're going to, in that sense, we're going to get back to a lot of the basics as well. I think you're going to see back to the motherland and, the old world grapes. And I think you're going to see a lot of the new world trying to not just hang on to grapes like Malbec in Argentina and Cabernet in Chile, but you're going to see them venture out into the Pinot Noirs and the Tempranillos of the
world.
Which is new for them. And they're making really good quality.
If that happens, I don't know if you agree, Alex, but if that happens, will Champagne come back?
Oh, Champagne is definitely coming back.
And you know what's coming back? Rosé is getting very, very popular. Rosé.
Oh, yeah.
Rosé
yeah.
isn't sparkling yeah. rosé. It's not just March anymore. It's year-round. It's a year-round wine now.
Yeah, I like that. And we've always loved them here on the Futschmuss, so we're excited about that. To come back to champagne, because it is the drink time. Of this time, some
sure
kind of
is.
Bubbly.
Sure.
People have tended to feel more comfortable ordering Prosecco. They've been to Italy more than they've been to the Champagne region. They're nervous about pronouncing the names of the champagnes, whereas Prosecco is Prosecco. It's easy to pronounce. Yep. It's often less expensive on the menus. And so I've always had this question. Champagne is so gorgeous to me. It is my favorite thing. And so I wait to see if this will be the year of champagne.
Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, last year we did see in my restaurant a small uptick in sparkling wine sales.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Not a huge, not like, oh, everyone's drinking it.
It's not just for celebrations. People are drinking it like a white wine.
Yeah.
The trends I've noticed in wine, people are going towards bio wines, what they're calling in France, like biodynamically grown wines, organically grown wines. People are more concerned about what's going into, you know, onto the land, the pesticides, the herbicides, and looking for wines to be cleaner and you know, better for you. So
that's good.
You know, lower sulfites.
Food is medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
You know, I think, Europe just now is passing another law reducing the sulfite content of wine, so they've dropped it by another notch. So that's a trend that we'll be seeing.
Yeah. I feel like
does
gives
that
you
affect
headaches.
The flavor of the wine?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. The wherever you get the pure expression of the fruit, you get pure flavor out of the final product.
Taste more fruit when they lower the sulfites?
You'll taste more of what the real wine is. Because if you taste and we've done this, I mean, Alex, I know, has done this, where you taste the wine that is a sort of a recipe industrial wine, and then you have something that comes from a pure biodynamic estate, and you taste those side by side, same grape from similar areas, it blows you away.
Yeah.
It's amazingly expressive how the biodynamic wine is compared to the
and
engineered wine.
How do we describe what biodynamic wine is? They grow in an organic way, but they follow the phases of the moon.
Celestial components to it. There's looking at the farm as like an organism, so what comes in and what goes out is important, and they're making their own fertilizers and teas and compost, and
it's using animals in the vineyards and things
chickens
like that.
For pests and ticks. And
all right, so because I have a smartphone, I looked up what Whole Foods, they're a big company in this country, and I looked up to see what they thought the trends of 2017 will be. Do you want to hear them? Because this is pretty cool.
Okay.
You ready? Wellness tonics, food as medicine,
You hit that one right out
of the park. Bioproducts.
There you go. Yeah, wow.
Alex hit that one out of the park.
Ding, ding, ding.
This is a fun one. Coconut everything. Think chips, ice cream, butters. Yep. Mm-hmm. Japanese food beyond sushi, like dried kelp, wakame, and Japanese-style pickles. Creative condiments, such as black sesame tahini, habanero jam, ghee, which is butter, and black garlic puree. Mm-hmm.
Black garlic was big.
Yeah. Alternative pastas.
I like that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Like whole wheats and things different
alternative
grains.
Grain noodles made from quinoa,
like
lentils, chickpeas.
Chickpeas is the newest one.
Yeah.
Purple foods. Black rice, purple asparagus, purple corn.
Potato. Squid ink.
Carrots.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's some good ones, right?
And
we hit on a few of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we see how Whole Foods is going to be ordering.
That's it.
Whether you like it or not, this is what you get.
That's
fun. So now we know what's on there. It's going to be on their shelves. That's
so funny thing, though, going back to that topic of the European wineries and going completely biodynamic, you see signs all over. We were just there a couple weeks ago, and all over outside the vineyards in Verona and Valpolicella, everything. I mean, the honey is being produced by the fruits, everything, and the signs are up everywhere.
Plowing with horses.
Yeah.
Remember, it's amazing. Instead of using tractors, you're using horses with a little plow behind it. It's so neat.
We
it's being smarter and healthier.
We just led that tour
to Italy.
And we're starting to work to put together another one. That will probably be in, I think, in the fall, this coming fall. When we were in Italy, and we'll go back to Italy again, another region, when we were there in that particular region in Piemonte, they had a lot of what you're talking about, Mark. There were, we saw much more biodynamic wine and farms and a consciousness about that in wine stores. So it's that's pretty exciting.
I've got one that just popped into my head that I'm not sure that what I think of, and I've had it a few times. What about ramen? Does anyone here, have you seen, like, there's restaurants where in New York, everybody only serve ramen.
They're crazy
and
for
it. Ramen for me, I don't know, maybe it's because ramen for me was what we took and put in the coffee pot in our college dorm back in the day, and then you'd pour the water in it, and that would be your dinner, and you got, like, I don't know, you got this whole box of them for $3 or something. And now there's fine dining restaurants that are making, like, really high-end ramen with amazing ingredients. I mean, we even have a noodle place in Simsbury now that has a ramen on.
Little River's doing one in Hartford.
Yeah. So, I mean, is ramen something that's...
Oh, yeah. I think it's just starting to take off.
Yeah, so maybe we'll see
it's
more.
It's comfort food, though, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's salty and salty, fun to eat.
It's a natural progression from broth, which was so huge this year.
People
like bone broth?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Our generation, like, we grew up on mac and cheese, and now you go into, like, a restaurant, and you see, like, these high-end, like, lobster mac and cheese. Is why not ramen too, because we grew up on that, so it's playing
familiar,
to our comfort
familiar
zone,
but
now, like, adulting it.
So we just wanted to say Happy New Year's to all of you from all of us. We're so glad you're with us, and hope it's the best year it possibly can be for you.
I'll take it from here, Faith. We know you have a train to catch. Say hello to Ryan Seacrest for us when the ball drops. Coming up, Chris Prosperi's slow cooker brisket with two unexpected ingredients. And in our third segment, we'll get all food nostalgic with blogger and author Jenny Rosenstruck. Her new book is How to Celebrate Everything. She's sharing recipes for a copycat Entenmann's cake and that old classic chocolate pudding pie, plus her New Year's Eve dinner. We hope you will make it a New Year's resolution to help feed the hungry in 2017. It'll feed your spirit. We'll be right back.
For auld lang syne, my dear. For auld lang syne. For auld lang syne, my dear. For auld lang syne. We'll take a cup of kindness yet. For days of auld lang syne. Days of auld lang syne.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready.
Hey, I'm Alex Province. Just a quick reminder that you guys should sign up for our podcast by going to foodschmooze.org. It's really easy. All you do is go there once, you sign up, it's free, and you'll never miss a show. Also, while you're there, check out our delicious curated food, wine, cocktails, recipes. It's all at foodschmooze.org. And for those of us who love Facebook, go to Faith Middleton Foodschmooze. We love to, like, talk to you guys there, so leave us a comment. I think Robin does. I do. Faith.
We're on every day.
Chris, maybe not so much.
Guilty.
Chris
every
is
once
busier
in a while,
than we are.
Every once in a while, I hit like. Does that count?
That's good. So Faith just had to dash, but I'm here with Chris Prosperi of Metro East of Simsbury, winebroker Mark Raymond, our senior producer Robin Doyon Aiken, and Chris, we just ate the most delicious brisket I've ever had. How did you make it?
Yeah, I know. And it has a great story, Chris. So
I know.
Make sure you tell
it. And you caught me Googling on my phone right now the ingredients, because Mark said, hey, I taste blah, blah, blah. And he's like, is that in there? And I'm like, I don't know. And I don't know, because it has a secret ingredient, well, and I don't know all the ingredients in the secret ingredient.
I'm going to blow people's minds right now.
All right,
now,
go ahead. You do it,
know
and then I'm going to look at the other ingredients.
Okay, so in Chris's slow cooker brisket, you will find, obviously, brisket. And here's the thing, a package of Lipton beef onion soup mix. Well, I'll finish. A diced onion, a container of mushrooms. Also, another sort of surprise ingredient to me anyway was a can of Coke.
Yeah. And this is so cool.
It's a surprise recipe.
It really is.
Because I think you have to have it first by not knowing what it is. You have to eat it first with not having the list of ingredients in front of you. So you come at it objectively. Like I did. The first time I had this, this recipe is not mine. It comes from one of my best friends, Lee White. Yeah. And she makes this every year around the holidays. And she made it for, believe it or not, a bunch of us chefs. And I do it in the crock pot. She just did it in a sort of wrapped in foil, braised it in foil. We were like ogling it when it came out of the oven. Again, when it comes out of the oven, you don't know what's in it. You just see this beautiful piece of brisket with these mushrooms. So,
Mark, you're like picking through over the top. Celery.
Yeah. And he's like, what's it? And he's like, is that in it? Is that in it? And I'm like, I got to look up the Lipton onion soup mix to see what's
And so, so the Coca-Cola, the can of Coke, I mean, it gives it, it's adding sugar, some caramel color, you know, some
acid.
Serve
as a tenderizer?
It doesn't act as a tenderizer because it's not in there long enough, but it just acts as this flavor thing.
Yeah.
You know, at first I thought it was strange, but then you guys reminded me, like, Robin, what do you do for an Easter ham? A lot of people use cola in their hams.
Oh. Coca-Cola actually has cookbooks out there. A friend of mine, I was doing this recipe one, told me about she does a cake with Coca-Cola.
Huh.
And she just takes a box mix and then doesn't put any of the other stuff that it says to put in it. She just takes a can of Coke and puts it in that and bakes it in the oven, and she says it's the most.
The bubbles probably make it like light and fluffy, right? You're adding some effervescence to it. So I was like picking apart the brisket, and I was like, did you smoke it? Because the outside is this is like beautiful red color. And you're like, no, that's from the Coke.
Yeah. Wow. So this is what we do. It's this easy. Go to your supermarket, get a couple pound piece of brisket. This time of year, you can get it at any market, right? It's not very expensive. I put it in the crock pot. I sprinkle the onion soup mix over the top. I take a cup of diced onions, or sometimes I use pearl onions.
Yeah.
So there's not even any chopping. In this one, I had a bag, a one-pound bag of pearl onions.
I was
in
noticing.
The freezer.
So
I just, you didn't even have to cut an onion. So that was even easier. I take some mushrooms, quarter them or slice them, throw it in, pour in the Coke. I even now have the Mexican Coca-Cola that has
the real sugar.
In it. I don't know. Some people say you can taste the
difference. You can. That's right?
Cool. Absolutely. Yeah.
So anyway, I put that in there. You put it on low for 8 hours or high for 4 hours.
Yep.
And then this actually tip comes from the first time Lee served it to us. Jacques was there. Jacques Pepin was there. And he was like, you know what would make it even better is if you took the liquid and you reduced it a little bit and thickened it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I did too. So you take some of the liquid
like
out. Yeah, so I take the meat out of the crock pot. I put it in on a little serving plate, and then I scoop up most of the mushrooms and some of that liquid and the onions, and I put it in a pot, and I bring it up to a simmer. I reduce it maybe just by a quarter, and then I thicken it with cornstarch.
That's awesome.
And then,
so you did use cornstarch.
It was so
delicious. Just a little cornstarch. Just it takes it to the level, and check this out. Yeah. It takes it to the level where I could and have served this recipe in my restaurant. I don't say Coca-Cola braised beef brisket. I just say braised beef brisket.
Although I'll tell you, if you put cola braised brisket,
there's that one, three times fast.
On a menu, I bet you the kids would go through that like you would not.
Oh yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
I never even thought of it.
It makes it an instant family
favorite.
So, do you think there's still caffeine in it?
Oh, sure, right? The caffeine doesn't go away.
Don't give it to my kids.
Wow, maybe you have to use Coke Zero, right?
No, that still has caffeine.
Oh, that's lost
caffeine. Yeah, yeah. No one really has decaffeinated Coke, I find, because I actually quite like it. If you want a Coke late at night or something.
But again, you don't have to use Coke. I've had this with Dr. Pepper.
Root beer.
Right?
Root beer, sure. Yeah.
It was really the onion soup packet that was the surprise ingredient for me. But then I read on it, I see the story that goes along with this brisket, and I think, you know, if it's good enough for Jacques Pepin, it is good enough for me.
See, and this is where I don't know where this part comes from, because I'm preparing this recipe a couple times this holiday season, and I need to get my onion soup mix because it's not something I stock at the restaurant.
Right.
You know, I got to go find it. And I go to the supermarket, and it looks like there was a riot in the supermarket in the soup aisle.
Oh, yeah.
The onion soup
this
mixes
time of year?
Are all gone, disheveled, thrown around.
So what are people using them for?
They're using it.
Like
what
dips?
About the dip? Right.
right?
Oh, I love sour cream dip.
Yeah, of course. Mm.
There's so many uses for it. It's like this cheater ingredient that's this pre-seasoning thing that you can
use. So what's it adding? Like umami, right?
I just read the ingredients.
No MSG.
Let's just say it's a holiday, New Year's Eve. We don't have to know everything.
No judging.
It might be good that Faith had to catch a train. Yep.
Actually,
she's
like,
not
no,
into you know chemicals
what?
In her food.
I know, but you know what? Faith loves this dish. Actually, Lee brought it here once for Faith for lunch, and she had it, and she absolutely loved it.
So we had it with your potatoes, your olive oil potatoes, which are so good.
Wow. So that's another good thing, right? So if you want to do mashed potatoes that are a little different, all I do is boil some Yukon potatoes or red potatoes until they're fully cooked, and then just mash them with extra virgin olive oil and sea salt, and that's it.
Oh,
instead of cream
so
and
simple.
Butter.
Yeah, perfect side for that.
So you know what we should have drank with that brisket was maybe some champagne.
Oh, it is New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay.
Do you have any bottles
around?
It is the
season.
I like it.
So we had a question on the site a week or so ago, and I thought I would get some help from you guys answering this. One of our listeners was saying, hey, you guys, you recommended a Spanish wine. I really want to know what it is. I want to get it. But what she was really talking about was Spanish cava. That's what you're talking about. It wasn't a Spanish wine. So what is the difference?
Was this on Facebook or
it was on the it was on the website.
Okay.
The website.
Otherwise, Alex would have answered it.
And I
would have hit like.
I would have seen it. So just a quick rundown, and Mark, jump in and help me. But basically, cava comes from a region outside of Barcelona, Spain, and they've been making sparkling wine there forever, and they use the traditional method champenois, so they ferment it inside the bottle, just like they do in champagne, but they use their own indigenous grapes, Macabeo, Charello, and Parellada, and there's a quiz at the end of the show.
Excellent.
So it is a Spanish wine.
It is.
Just a category
absolutely.
Of Spanish wine.
And they range from like Segura Veudas, which is inexpensive and good, to you can spend $40 for a cava, and they really are quite good.
Who hasn't seen the black bottle.
Yeah, that's the
Freixenet. That's probably the most known one, but there are others.
And they come, like the Nando Sasha, the very dry, to the Brut, to, the semi-sec, and all the way down to sweet. And then, some people are drinking like Prosecco, which we love on the show as well.
So what's the difference between Prosecco, cava, champagne, and American sparkling wine?
So, it's still easy. So Prosecco comes from a place, Prosecco in Italy, and it uses a grape called Prosecco, also called Glera. Instead of fermenting it in the bottle, like secondary fermentation, method champenois, they do it in a big tank, which is why they keep the cost down, why it's cheaper. But Proseccos are so refreshing and clean and perfect for like sparkling cocktails.
Tend to be a little fruitier.
Yeah, what's the difference between, what do you taste differently between doing it in the bottle and doing it in the tank? Is it less bubbles? Is it more bubbles? Well, bigger bubbles?
I think the bubbles when it's bottle fermented, you get a little bit more fine bubble, refined bubble. Whereas if you're done in tank, it's sort of a larger sort of carbonation feel, mouthfeel.
So sort of like beer versus, right?
Yeah,
the way beer is.
I guess you could see how there's different carbonation levels in beer.
If you like a nutty, sort of yeasty, so real champagne is nutty and yeasty and complex, and you try it, it almost tastes like, older white wine.
And is that because of the way it's done?
Well,
it's
aged, it's fermented in the bottle, it has all the yeast, which, there's yeast in bread, so that's why, champagne smells like bready.
Yeah, doughy.
It's doughy. It's been aged in the bottle, some of these for like 3 to 5 years. If you like complex, then cava is like a good alternative for champagne at less money. If you just like sparkling and clean and refreshing, like you were saying, Mark, and Prosecco's
a great.
Yeah, I drink a lot of Prosecco.
And
I find it simple, easy, no fuss.
I think one of the questions everybody gets all the time is that, they say, I love champagne, or, I love sparkling wine, but they don't really understand champagne is a place. And that's where the French champagne comes from. And then cava is a place, and that's where the Spanish sparkling comes from, and it's made in similar manner. And then you have Prosecco for Italy, and then we have all sorts of sparkling wine that's made in the United States.
And
some are really good. I mean,
but absolutely, really great quality, but they're not called champagne.
But some are made champagne, like champagne?
In the champagne method.
And some are made in the Prosecco method, too?
No.
Or not so much?
Most mostly, well, I think.
I think most of the sparkling Prosecco is made
there. That tank fermentation, I guess, is what I'm asking. Is there anyone in this country doing that style of sparkling wine that you know of?
Maybe cheaper stuff.
Yeah. Unless they're expensive. Yeah. I'm sure there is.
So remember, when you ferment it in the bottle, so you have to first make a still wine. You have to put it in a bottle. Now you have to, you know, they add a little dosage, so a little yeast, a little sugar, a little alcohol. Now they have to let that ferment, and then you have to turn the bottle sideways and keep turning it and get all the yeast down to the neck of the bottle, riddle it, and then you have to disgorge it, and now you have to, you know, fill it back up again and cork it, and now cellar it for like 2 or 3 or 5 years. So it's expensive.
I have a new appreciation for
it's an expensive process.
And you have these guys in caves that are like riddling like
Marks. That's a job.
That's a job.
And what if you could see Alex riddling right now with his hands trying to explain this.
Well, these guys, you know, if you've ever watched them, they're so fast. They can do like
they
a pallet of
the
them.
Bottle.
Oh, yeah.
So, but you know, the thing is, go into a good wine shop, a shop that you like and trust. Chris and I, we were just saying, don't be afraid to tell them like what you want to spend. Say, I want to spend $10 for a nice bottle. They'll have favorites at that price point.
Yeah.
Or say, I want to spend $15. What's your favorite $20 bottle? These guys will help you, you know, steer you. Don't be shy. You don't have to like worry about looking cheap. Just be honest.
And a good wine shop will have plenty of variety in all those price
points.
Right? They'll have good ones at 10, they'll have 15, they'll have 20, all the way up to in the 100.
And there's nothing wrong with saying what your budget is, especially if you have a punch in mind or something and you're not really going to be toasting with the champagne. Maybe you want to go down a little bit.
Exactly.
And Chris had a neat idea. So when you do these parties as well, do a couple bottles of lots of different stuff. So, you know, if you're going to have people over, try a bottle or two of Cava, try a Prosecco, try a champagne, and, you know, have them all.
It's a good conversational thing, too, right? Like,
to
what
see the difference.
Did you like that one? Or did you, here, try this. This is actually the Spanish one. Try this against the French one or the American one, or try this against the Prosecco.
Right.
And it gets you going
what
the differences are.
Who's
going
to saber a bottle tonight?
Oh, yeah. Do we still have the video up, Robin?
It is available, yes.
We have a video. Go ahead, Alex.
So Jacques Pepin, you know, came in and into the studio and sabers a bottle of champagne. I'm next to him, so I feel like I'm squealing the whole video. Because every time, you know,
but you
slinks,
did it too, right?
Oh, it's actually really easy to do. So, you know, I don't want to tell anyone on the air.
They should do it.
I wish I could practice on a really terrible bottle.
Yeah, what do you do? Do you buy like a $3 bottle or maybe some sparkling apple cider? Would it work?
Well,
no.
No, you have to use.
You need to
go bigger.
Just
got to
be committed.
It's not hard to do.
It's not. It's a lot easier than you would think.
When you watch the video, you'll see I am the one who didn't do it, and that's because I'm not going to waste the champagne. Even if it's a 1% chance that I'm going to blow it, that ain't going to happen. Can you practice on the empty bottle?
It's really fun. I do recommend, though, you do it outside.
Yeah, Rob and I
will
be in the parking garage after with all the empty bottles trying.
Don't have anyone, you know, in the way. It's like playing golf. Don't have anyone, like, taking a photograph for Facebook.
In front of you.
Do you scream four?
To the side.
Like and make sure cars are out of the way and everything else.
Yeah. Don't fire it at the windows.
I got a better one. Don't try this at home.
There we go.
Watch the video like I did. Enjoy it and drink your champagne. Happy holidays.
Too funny.
Yeah.
So as Faith would say, we love the local. Support your local food growers and food makers. And for on-demand delivery of the Food Schmooze podcast and all the recipes, restaurant recommendations, and streaming videos, including our holiday card for all of us drinking champagne, go to foodschmooze.org. After the break, a New Year's Eve dinner featuring three of my favorite things, lobster, champagne, and butter.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Stay with us.
This is the Food Schmooze Party offering the richness of life, coming to you in Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and New York, including Westchester County, where our special guest lives, the east end of Long Island, of course, the Hamptons. I am Robin Doyon Aiken. I produce today's show. I also produce a website with the help of two very awesome volunteers, Paula Pierce and Jason Black. I cannot thank you guys enough for helping me get the recipes on the site each week. I wish I could pay you in cheese or chocolate or some other delicious thing. To listen to the show on WNPR, our station, it airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations, as well as recipes we feature and short videos, are always online at foodschmooze.org, so come and talk to us there. I'm joined in the studio by three guys who love Jenny Rosenstock's book, How to Celebrate Everything, because they're always looking for an excuse to celebrate anything.
Oh, yeah.
They're Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast and Simsbury and winebrokers Alex Province and Mark Raymond. Now, I thought it would be a good idea to end the year with a book that'll inspire us to cook all year long in 2017. And what better book could we feature than one that's all about celebrations? Jenny Rosenstock is the creator of the enormously popular blog, Dinner, A Love Story. It's also a best-selling book. She's also the author of Dinner, A Playbook, a 30-day plan for mastering the family meal. If you listen to this show, you know that I'm kind of all about this home cook moms that really just speak to me. Jenny's latest book, How to Celebrate Everything, includes more than 100 recipes and rituals for birthdays, holidays, family dinners, and every day in between. It is out now. It is like looking through someone's treasured family album, and you will want Jenny and her husband to adopt you, even if you are old enough to be their grandparents. Jenny, welcome to the Food Schmooze. Thank you for celebrating with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. What an intro. I love it.
This book is all about creating rituals. Rituals is a word that comes up over and over, and not just in this book, Jenny, but in your first two books and in all the writing you do, really. Can you talk for a second about the difference between routine and ritual?
Sure. Basically, I wrote about rituals because I feel like most of us live in these worlds where we are kind of on the go 24/7, right? And every day feels like a race to the finish line. And we do have our routines. You know, when our kids were little, we relied on those routines. They just sort of like gave our days structure, and we need those routines to keep us sane. But rituals, I find, as the kids have gotten older, and my kids are 13 and 14 now, I find that rituals really help you slow down and infuse meaning into that routine. Mm-hmm. It's a very intentional way of stopping and shining a spotlight on a moment for you that actually matters. In a weird way, it feels like stopping time, and you know, this is not something I would have explained to you 10 years ago when my kids were younger, but I feel like I really want to make sure that I'm stopping and paying attention, and also I want to make sure they're stopping and paying attention and making sure that we all feel lucky to be happy and to be where we are.
To be together.
To be together.
Yeah.
It's the point.
Exactly.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about some food that we eat when we are together. I want to talk first about your latkes.
Oh, yeah.
Potato pancake time.
We think of latkes, you know, not only as just Hanukkah food, but good old party food. Alex is always suggesting that we pair champagne with French fries. And so when
French fries.
Yeah, I love it. Highbrow, lowbrow.
When I saw your latkes spread in your book, which is so gorgeous, I knew exactly what I would be putting out for my New Year's Eve gathering.
Right. Latkes are one of those foods where you make them once a year, and you're like, why don't I do this all the time? It's so crazy.
That's
what you were saying. Yes.
Oh, my God. And they're also so easy to make fun. You know, we turn them into dinner all the time, usually in December when it's Hanukkah time. But, you know, we'll fry up potato pancakes and have applesauce and sour cream.
You hit on it. That's why people don't do it all the time, because no one wants to actually get into a big frying thing.
They can be a little bit laborious, but the payoff is so worth it.
Yeah, but they're
so
fun.
Yes.
There's some work involved, but the way I do them is everyone stands around the pan,
yes,
and you get the oil in there, and you're cooking together. People are topping them as they pop out of the pan onto the paper towels, and the kitchen becomes the party place.
I love that idea. And the party idea is nice, because when you have a party, it's so fun. There's so many different ways you can go. You know, I love just sort of freshly grated horseradish with them, or some salmon. onion, chopped red onion, always a classic. I mean, even we've done caviar too. You know, not super fancy caviar, just like the paddlefish caviar you can get at Whole Foods for like $15 or something. But it works, and that's dinner. You know, you got smoked salmon, that's your protein, and
I find people rummage through my fridge too. Like I'll have toppings out, like you said, the smoked salmon and the capers and stuff, and people will like open the refrigerator door. Hey, look, there's some shrimp in there. Let's chop that up and put on top.
Oh my God, I want to go to your house. Yeah, no, you basically can't go wrong. I think that's the message here. And I'll make a bunch of them ahead of time. I know I do like them hot right off the griddle, but if I make enough of them for a party, I just sort of heat them right before people come at 300. It's still, and you can put it out in a classic buffet. That works too.
I went to a latke party where she made the latkes ahead of time. It really is a great, if you're having a party, it is the make ahead food to do.
Yes.
And she kept them in her slow cooker. Like it wasn't anything to do with cooking, but that was how she just kept them warm.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
So they get stacked in?
They were stacked, but kind of strategically so that they didn't end up steaming in any way. You need to let some of the heat out so that you're not serving mushy latkes.
I've done them ahead of time, put them in the fridge and brought them out the next day and just refreshed them in the oven and they're fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They really do work great as a cook ahead kind of thing. And
but now you have me hooked on like hanging next to the frying pan.
That's the way I do it. I think it's more fun that way just if you have a big enough kitchen and people, they're like drawn to it.
Yeah.
And you get in the kitchen and the pan's going and everyone's like gathering around. And basically as you're making them, you're just tossing them onto a plate and people are eating them.
Or throwing them directly into people's mouths.
People are eating them as fast as you're making them. You know, they're like, come on, faster, faster.
What were you saying about the guy who has to squeeze the potato?
Yeah, my friend Lee, who does a latke party every year, she looks around the room when people arrive, and she looks for the person with the biggest hands to do the wringing, you know, because you put them in a towel and wring them out, right, to make them very dry, the shredded potato. So she always looks around, and she's like, hey, you, come here.
You got the biggest hands.
Yeah. Start ringing these.
Oh, by the way, Jenny's recipe for latkes, along with a bunch of really fun party toppings to put on them, is on our website, foodschmooze.org. To move over a little bit to sweets, you have two recipes in the book that I want to talk about, and both of them involve a little nostalgia.
Yes, I am all about nostalgia. And I think most people my age, or I would think most parents, the goal is always to sort of recreate your own childhood with your own kids. It just kind of hurdles you back when you have one bite of something that you used to have every day. I'm not breaking any news here, but I grew up in the 80s, so I grew up on a lot of, you know, processed food. And my mom, great cook, but that doesn't mean that occasionally, or I would say more than occasionally, we had, you know, Chef Boyardee ravioli, and we always, always had a big drawer packed with Entenmann's, like the whole aisle.
Love it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the house Chris and I were saying we would have liked to have been invited over to.
And Alex and I are, we always talk about, when we're talking about sweets as childhood, is the pudding. The mix you make in the pot on the stove.
Oh, yeah.
Right, the Jell-O pudding.
Try not to burn it. Try not to scorch the milk.
That is an excellent segue, Chris, to we have one of your chocolate pudding pies on the site, but tell us about your mom's. What is the inspiration for your recipe?
To go back a few weeks to Thanksgiving, every single year, I think, since the 80s, we've had two Jell-O chocolate pudding pies on our Thanksgiving.
Awesome.
With the graham cracker crust, like the key blue that we made.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, she now has six grandchildren, so they associate Thanksgiving with this Jell-O pudding pie. And I decided, why are we still having this pie when we can make a beautiful, you know, homemade chocolate pudding with Valrhona chocolate and with a homemade crust? And I was the fool who decided to put this pie next to the Jell-O pudding pie, and you can only imagine how that went over with the grandkids. They were like, what on earth? Why would you do that? You're so crazy. Why do we need it fancy? To be honest, I was kind of relieved that it didn't. My pie, don't
get me
wrong,
it
was delicious, but it was not.
Not the same.
You know, it's nostalgia wins over delicious every
100%.
Time.
Absolutely.
And listen, you are doing it highbrow because you're doing the stovetop pudding. See, that's how we were the highbrow. We didn't do the instant one where you put the mixer in it.
No.
To do the real pudding, you had to stir.
I never thought
of that. It was labor intense.
It was labor, and you made real pudding.
I didn't want her pie to be beaten because then that would have been the end of some era with me, too.
Right.
Are the graham cracker crust coming from, are you crushing graham crackers and making it with butter?
It's a little bit cheating when I say that it's entirely homemade because it's a press and crust, so I use honey graham crackers. You can find organic honey graham crackers, but I have to say, like the Nabisco ones.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the pudding, you don't need them.
No. Don't mess around.
Don't mess with classics.
Totally.
The second dessert that you grew up with was one laced also with nostalgia for you, and it's the sour cream chocolate nut loaf.
Ooh.
It's your homemade version of an Entenmann's cake, right?
Right, back to that Entenmann's drawer. I mean, you would not believe what we had in that drawer. I'm sure you guys can all relate, but it was like the chocolate frosted donuts and
my favorite
chips and the big, like, thickly spackled frostings cupcakes, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
Alex still eats that.
Oh,
occasionally.
I don't know why I don't anymore. I mean, I do know why, but
with a gallon of milk and those chocolate donuts.
Gosh. But the one prize for us was always the sour cream chocolate chip nut loaf, which my father was obsessed with. They discontinued it. I still have yet to find out why, but this was maybe like 20 years ago. It just disappeared.
Probably still some around.
Yeah. I had been trying to recreate it for my whole life, and I went to some party where someone had made like a chocolate chip pound cake that kind of tasted like it, and I thought, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to recreate that taste so that I can remember what that tasted like. After many, many attempts, I did it. This recipe in this book, I'm immediately back in like 1982, just like in my linoleum kitchen with my father, and it's delicious, even if you don't have all those memories associated with, but I think most people actually do with Entenmann's products.
If you were raised in the 80s, of course.
I remember it too. I think with this recipe, you are actually providing a service for those of us who really miss this cake.
This is on our website, Robin?
It is on our website.
That was the idea.
Yep. Alex is making this for New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
We are with Jenny Rosenstock, who is the creator of the blog Dinner, A Love Story, and her latest book is How to Celebrate Everything. In the time we have left, we have to ask you, because it's the time, your fancy pants New Year's Eve dinner. This could not be easier, and the centerpiece is steamed lobsters with champagne butter. And I'm using more than just a tablespoon of the champagne in my butter, but I really want a bubbly butter.
Yes.
So talk to us about this, Jenny.
Well, the whole night is actually really fun because in spite of authoring 4 cookbooks at this point and writing about food for so long, I'm not a fancy cook. I'm very much the home cook that you were describing earlier, Robin. But on New Year's Eve, I sort of become another person, and we really embrace this whole idea of fussy, fancy finger food, you know, like I would never make gougère. I don't even know how to cook that, right? You know, like this seems like not something that I would spend time doing. But for some reason, New Year's Eve, we all go crazy. And my kids still want to actually hang out with us New Year's Eve. So we do a big fancy New Year's Eve dinner and have lobsters as the centerpiece because we don't really ever have lobsters. I mean, we'll get a lobster roll in the summer if we are in New England, but we never really make them. And so it's a real treat to do this once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Fun time to do like a black tie party.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to get my kids to dress up.
They have that little tuxedo t-shirt, right?
Perfect. Yeah. No, we're mostly about the food being fussy, not our attire. But it's really fun. And we start the night with potato chips with a little creme fraiche and, again, rat caviar, which is so yummy. And then we do popcorn in truffle oil, which we had really, I don't know if you guys have ever been to the Inn at Little Washington in Virginia. Is it Virginia? They have this popcorn there that has like shaved truffles on it. That's like the most ridiculous, indulgent thing you've ever eaten. And so we recreate it with, we just use like a little truffle oil, which works. We sit down to our dinner, and it's lobster as a centerpiece with the recipe that I have in this book is a beet and blood orange salad with pistachios.
Yummy.
Yeah, and then we finish with brownie sundaes, which is not exactly the fanciest, fussiest thing, but it's a hit.
So, Jenny, were you going to tell us how to make the lobster and butter?
Full disclosure, my husband is always the lobster maker in my house, but it's not complicated. I mean, we favor steaming versus boiling because we think that it results in a more tender lobster.
Okay.
And basically, you put 2 inches of salted water in the bottom of a very large pot. The rule in general, I think, is you want the salt water to have the salinity of the sea. And then you set a steamer rack inside, bring the water to a boil over high heat, and then add the lobsters one at a time. And you want to make sure there's room. If you have to do this in 2 pots, maybe that would be better, but depending on how many you're making, you don't want them to all be crammed in there. Basically, once they're done, you shell them and you you know, you fight about who gets the tail versus the claws. We have a big divide in our house over who likes what. And then the butter, the champagne butter is really, you know,
now we're talking.
The kids just like the idea that they're having champagne on New Year's Eve, and it's really not a lot. It's more for just for celebratory effect than actual taste. But we melt butter, we stir in a tablespoon of champagne with some fresh lemon juice, and yeah, lots of it. You just do not want to run out of butter when you're having
champagne butter.
It's simple and elegant at the same time. For steaming times, for those of you who will ring in the new year with Jenny's lobster recipe, on the site you'll find it has a handy guide for steaming lobsters by weight. So you'll go all the way from 10 minutes for a 1-pound lobster to 18 minutes for a 2-pound lobster. Can't go wrong.
There you go.
Jenny, thank you for spending the last of 2016 with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Happy New Year.
You too.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You can find information on Jenny Rosenstrock's book, How to Celebrate Everything, as well as her recipes for party latkes, Jenny's take on her mom's chocolate pudding pie, her Entenmann's copycat chocolate nut loaf, and New Year's Eve lobsters with champagne butter. All four recipes on foodschmooze.org. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for Faith's fun 60-second food schmoozes. I learn a lot of little tricks from them. Faith is back next week. Until then, from me, Robin Doyon Aiken, Chris Prosperi, Alex Province, and Mark Raymond, thank you all so much for listening.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
Thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little party in your life, we're here and online all the time at foodschmooze.org. And of course, also on Facebook at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.